The rumors are true. Some of Arcade 1UP's assets have been sold to a competitor. Plus, the Indie Game Awards have revoked a winner due to AI usage. Tonight is December 21st, 2025, and the Bobby Blackwell Show, featuring your calls and chat comments, is up next. So you would say, even if... Okay, I'll let you go. You talk. Wow, what happened to your voice? Thank you, Skype. So video games, that's what the show is about.
This is that one Akia Ripper from Sweden.
And what's with all the Halo hate, Bob? You've been hating on Halo a lot lately.
I just don't like shooters. I'm not saying it's a bad game, I just don't like it. Billy O.K. says he can't be seen in public playing games that aren't hardcore. What would people say? And what up, G and Chad is once again talking about wrestling. That's why. It's not because they hate the fans. It's more because they have to start from scratch.
Hogwash. Later.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, Bobby Blackwolf.
Happy shortest day of the year to those who celebrate. It's the winter solstice. Or, if you're a Rush fan like me, it is 21-12 day. So it's a good day. It's a good day. Depends on what you look at. Anyway, hello and welcome to a 21-12 edition, I guess, of the Bobby Blackwell Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as sometimes reminiscing about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwell. If you're joining us live here on the Voice Geeks Network, welcome. Thank you so much for being here. We do try to tape this show live just about each and every Sunday night, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, over at the Voice of Geeks Network Twitch channel, twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Come join us and interact with the show directly. But this is a podcast, so you can join us on our Discord server throughout the week and tell us about things maybe you want us to talk about. And sometimes we get so much we can't fit it all in 1 hour. You can join our Discord server, vognetwork.com/discord is where you can go to talk about that stuff. So like there was a little bit of talk about the Limited Run Games class action lawsuit, which somehow, because I bought a vinyl record, I'm a part of the class action. Okay, but we're not going to talk about that here tonight, and some other stuff that, you know, anyway. I usually do say just about each and every Sunday night. We will not be here in 2 weeks, so this would be January 4th, because I'm going to go ahead and just kind of run this down really quickly. I talked about it more last week. I am going to be up in Pittsburgh at Awesome Games Done Quick 2026. I will be hosting for my 11th time on the big stage. And so I do want to share once again what I'm going to be doing. It hasn't changed yet. It always could. But on Monday, January 5th at about 9:40 p.m. Eastern is when my block of three games will start. So Mario Kart World, all panels by Helix. We've rated them before. And then right after that, Jack 3, a no out of bounds restricted race by Nintendo and Zyphels. And then right after that, Legacy of Kain Soul Reaver, all bosses by Jaxler. I've hosted for Jaxler before. That's going to be a really hype and really high-intensity commentary and everything. It's always a fun time when Jaxler's up there. Then on Thursday, January 8th, starting at about 7:50 p.m. Eastern, somewhere around there, Super Metroid GT Classic being run by Ryan Ford. And then I have the Arcade Showcase. I get the Rhythm Game Showcase this time around. My DX Prism Plus, the Arcade Showcase by Star Rod Kirby 86 and Kirby Catcher. Lots of Kirbys, lots of, and who knows, there might be even other Kirbys. So I'm going to be hosting those things. If you're wondering, yes, the My Showcase will be there in the room. There's going to be, I believe, there's several cabinets that are going to be brought to the arcade that's going to be available all week, and they're going to bring one of those cabinets up to the stream room. It's going to be set up live there. I believe last time my was on, it was a remote run where they were at an arcade and they were sending the feed. But no, this is actually going to be in person at the event. I will be able to look right at them. Esther Nomad says, will it wash clothes, though? Well, apparently, if you're really good at it, you do sweat. And so that kind of wets the clothes. So maybe then, I don't know, you should probably then put it in a real washing machine. Anyway, that's where I'm going to be in 2 weeks. So there's going to be no show on Sunday, January 4th. But there will be one January 11th because I will be back by then. So there's that. But I actually haven't mentioned this at all because I didn't know what I was going to be doing until literally late last night. So there are other speedrunning marathons out there in the world, and they are not all in English. And one of the big ones that's out there is based in Japan, and it's called RTA in Japan. And they it is a charity speedrun, but it's more focused on the runs rather than the charity. But they are benefiting Doctors Without Borders. And it takes place in person at a place just outside. I believe it's in the greater Tokyo area, which is a very, very huge area. I don't claim to know exactly where it is, but it is in person. But one of the things that has started to happen is that just like how Games Done Quick has Le French Restream and the Japanese Restream, where people will, translate it into the languages of their home country. There is now an English Restream for a lot of these events that do not take place in English. So I actually applied at the very last minute to be one of the hosts for the English Restream of RTA in Japan Winter 2025. So a lot of times I will probably be the only English voice on the stream, which is great because it's mainly me keeping chat company. So it's going to be here on Twitch, twitch.tv/English Restream. And I actually even know the five times I'm going to be on the air. I'm on the air for like 20 hours. And they actually... they break it up by time, not necessarily by game. So I will probably be like slipping in during a game. So in some of these, I will be with someone who's actually like knowledgeable of the game. And other times it'll be me by myself with a game that I've never seen before in my life, just keeping chat company. Anyway, so it actually starts Christmas Day. And I am actually, because all of my stuff is that's like family related is Christmas Eve, I said, you know what? I am available. And they're like, great, we're going to take it. So on Thursday, December 25th, starting at 1 p.m. Eastern, so 10 a.m. Pacific, until 5 o'clock. So I'm on for 4 hours. I will be on the air while they are running the end of Etrian Odyssey 4, Legends of the Titan, any percent category. Then Aliens Colonial Marines, any percent. And then the start of Little Town Hero, any percent with the hard difficulty. So whenever 5 o'clock comes around, even if we're in the middle of Little Town Hero, we're going to switch and I will be off the air. But on that night, I'm back. So starting at midnight... on that night, so the morning of Friday, December 26th, but really the night of the 25th, midnight to 3 a.m. Eastern, I will be starting the end of Border Break, which is a 2018 game, the main scenario, episode 1 to episode 16. Then Divine Dynamo Flamefrit, any percent. A game I've actually heard of, Star Fox 64, any percent. And then the start of Blade Chimera, any percent. Then that Friday night, starting at 11 p.m. until 3 a.m. Eastern on Friday, December 26th, the end of Paper Mario, any percent with no ace, which is the advanced code execution. Alien vs. Predator, the arcade version, any percent. Castlevania Lament of Innocence, any percent. Crazy, which I guess is one of the difficulties. And then the start of, and here we go. Dark Soccer's in chat. She's going to be like, you should have practiced this. And you're right. I probably should have. Kahatogaoka, High School Girls Glove Gleam of Force, Story Hell Percent. I get to host the start of that game. Probably not all the way to the end because then 3 a.m. will come. Then on Saturday, December 27th, starting at 10 p.m. until 2 a.m. Eastern, the end of Spell Tonero Perfect, all innings. The Frog for Whom the Bell Tolls, any percent, and then the start of Pikmin 4, where the category is Rescue Olimar. And then the last time, Monday, December 29th, from 11 p.m. to 3 a.m. Eastern, I will be hosting the end of Xenoblade Chronicles 3, Future Redeemed, any percent easy, Diddy Kong Racing, 100%, I know that game, and then Contra Operation Galaga, any percent, and it's even got in the category Arcade, Bill Reiser, Normal, Health Meter, Perks. So Yeah, so I am good. Yeah, Esther and Matt's like, hey, you're busy. I'm like, yeah, I'm going to be sitting right here in this seat using this microphone without the lights on because it's voice only. So I don't have to look good. I just have to sound good. So keep me company in twitch.tv/English Restream during any of those times. It's actually running 24 hours starting on December 25th, running until New Year's Eve. I am not available on New Year's Eve. So that is why you don't have me. I'm not there for any of that. And so I'm going to post this. This is basically, I had to piece this all together and learn how to convert from UTC, coordinated time, universal time, because that's what all this was in. I'm like, I hope I didn't schedule myself for like 6 a.m. or during the work day. Or anything like that. And I know nothing about these games. Unlike when like GDQ does restreams, we don't get like a rundown from the runner. Like when for Games Done Quick, for like Le French restream and the Japanese restream, GDQ actually has all the runners prepare a document that explains their run so the people that are actually doing those restreams can actually describe the tricks that are being explained on the stream in English, but to their Japanese audience or their French audience. And there's a couple other restreams of different languages. We don't get that here. So it's basically, we're just kind of sitting there going, okay. And we have no clue what's going on, but hey, chat, maybe you can tell me what's going on. And yeah, so it's going to be fun. Something I haven't done before. And so come hang out with us, and I will put more information in the Discord server of VOG, vognetwork.com/Discord, for more about that. Yeah, I wanted to talk about this, even though I don't have it yet. Usually I wait until I get something in my hands, but I wanted to mention this because I think there are people probably here on a part of the network, part of the community, that probably should know that this exists. And what I am talking about is a new retro computer. And this retro computer, it is for those of us who maybe grew up with the Commodore 64. And it is the Commodore 64 Ultimate. Now, I am showing a video from a YouTube video from Dan Wood. And it's showing the Starburst edition, but it's don't worry about that. There is a gray version of this. But essentially, the Commodore 64 Ultimate just released. People have been talking about it and pre-ordering it for months and months and months and months. And they finally just started shipping this week to people. And so all the YouTubers are getting their hands on it, and people are talking about it all across social media that are into this. And this is a FPGA, so this is the floating point programmable gate array version of the Commodore 64, whereas I have behind me the Commodore 64 Mini and Max. That's software emulation. This is hardware emulation, so much so that you can actually plug in all your old peripherals and hardware to this. Do you have an old Commodore 64 monitor and the cables that go to it? You can hook that up to this in full standard definition CRT glory. And even though it does have HDMI output, if you turn it on, you can actually output to both the HDMI monitor and your CRT monitor at the same time. So, but also if you have a 1541 disk drive, you can actually plug that in and get your old floppy disks and see if they've been demagnetized or not and actually load them on the Commodore 64 Ultimate. You can hook up a tape deck. You can hook up a printer. You can even hook up a modem, although it actually has Wi-Fi and wired Ethernet as part of it, and you can kind of emulate the modem experience. It does come in both what I'm showing, like this LED Starburst, which will even like, you know, react to the music, the SID chips and stuff. Or they do actually have like the basic beige that really looks like the original system. I got this weekend, I purchased the Starlight one. Now, they say this is not going to ship until February or March, but also the website says there's like 5,000 of these like ready to ship, and it does say awaiting shipment, and my order number did say batch one, which I believe is already in America. I don't know. So I may get this sooner than that. But this is an FPGA retro computer that works with all the old stuff. It has the same 9-pin joystick port that not only did Commodore have, but Atari had. Even the Sega Genesis had the same port. You can plug all that old stuff in. But you can also overclock this Commodore 64, so you can actually run things faster. There is a whole like menu that you can go in and even like download other things from the internet. You can get disk images from the internet. So in terms of the emulation of it, from what people have said, in terms of the accuracy of it, is it's pretty accurate. The SID chips, which is the music chips, apparently if you're trying to do things that aren't normal with the SID chips, the FPGA SID chips don't work all that well. But because of the way they made the board, you can actually just get a SID chip out of a Commodore 64 and put it into these Commodore 64 Ultimate, and then it'll actually use the actual chip instead of the FPGA emulated chip. So there's ways around a lot of this. I ordered this, and I'm going to hook it up to my old Commodore 64 monitor, which does work. I've got several hard drive or disk drives, 1541 disk drives. I've got all my old disks. I doubt any of them work, but this is probably going to be the way to go with Commodore 64, doing Commodore 64 stuff in the future. So the C64 is software emulation. That's what I have. I have the Mini and the Max. That's software emulation, and that's great too. But if you missed out on the C64 Max, which is the full-size keyboard, this is available now. And who knows, you may not have to wait until February to get it, which is why I wanted to mention now. Commodore.net is the name. Basically, a bunch of Commodore enthusiasts purchased the Commodore brands and the trademark from whoever owned it in July of 2025. So this is officially from Commodore, what is now called Commodore, basically. On this, actually, if you remember, unfortunately, I don't think it has logo, because people are talking about logo in our chat room. I don't think it has logo out of the box. It does have GEOS, G-E-O-S, which is the graphical operating system for the Commodore 64, and so you have to go find a mouse. It does not work with USB mice, even though there's USB ports. But if you have a Commodore 64 mouse, you can actually use GEOS as an operating system. It does come with it. The other thing that's neat that it comes with for people who are this was obviously done by people who love the old days and have fondness for the old days, is it actually does come with an instruction manual. And not only is the instruction manual actually all in your language, it's not padded out. For that, it's actually spiral bound, just like the original Commodore 64 instruction manual was in the 1980s. And it even teaches you basic and advanced basic and things like that. So it looks like the original user's guide, except it's for the Ultimate. And it tells you everything about it. And you don't see this that much anymore because people are like, oh, just scan this QR code and you can get this web page that'll have this. No, it's an actual like full-on spiral bound notebook book, and it even looks like, I believe it is the same size as the original Commodore 64 handbook. So this is very much a labor of love, and it's a love letter to the Commodore community. And I am sad that I did not pre-order it in July or August. I waited for reviews, and then reviews came out, and people loved it. So if this is something that you might be interested in, Commodore.net is where you can get, I believe it's, so the base price of the beige box, which is the one that looks like original Commodore 64, is $300. The Starlight one is $350, and there's a gold Founders Edition one that's a little bit more. But realize they do actually add the tariff tax. They actually call it a tariff tax to it. So you're paying that, you're paying the sales tax, then the tariff tax, then shipping, and things like that. So just keep that in mind that I think, like, I got the Starlight Edition, which is I base $350, but my total is like $460, $470 when you add all the state taxes and the tariff tax, which is what they literally, it's a separate line item called tariff tax. And E3ville asked how much it was. I believe it was $50 is how much they charged. And because I believe these were manufactured in China. So it's the China tariff tax. But yeah, Pod Culture says, never mind. It's too expensive. And I get it. Like, this is a very powerful device. It is the ultimate Commodore 64. You can get a C64 Mini for cheaper, and you know, if they make the C64 Max, it's cheaper than this. But this is literally like just a rebuilt Commodore 64 using modern hardware, and you can do a lot with it. So I am excited to get this and actually set it up on my actual Commodore 64. Monitor and maybe look at my old discs to see if some of those programs that I programmed years ago when I was a kid many years ago, see if I can reload them. So wanted to mention that because there are probably some people that really would want that and maybe missed out on the Commodore 64 Max, and because I don't think they've made another shipment of those. And maybe this is what they would be able to get back into their Commodore days. Commodore.net, you can find out more information there. And in terms of the C64, which did not have any Commodore branding because of the trademark stuff, Commodore.net even has a thing in their FAQ saying, hey, we love the people that make the C64. They've been in constant talks with us. We've been in constant talks with them. Maybe in 2026, you're going to hear more about a partnership or licensing agreement. So the C64, the software emulation, which is cheaper than this hardware emulation, they are not going away. Commodore's not squelching them or anything like that. So you can still get that. And the C64 Max, that was actually that's really fun to play with as well. It just doesn't, like, you can't plug in old hardware into it except for joysticks. The joysticks work. But, like, you can't plug in a 1541 disk drive. You can't have it go out to a old Commodore 64 monitor. And it is still emulation. Some of the SID stuff is even kind of worse on that. Something that you can play around with in emulators, and even I played around with this a little bit in emulators, is a recent release from the Video Game History Foundation. Now, I really love a lot of the work that the Video Game History Foundation has been doing, and they've been doing a lot of stuff with preserving things. They are, I think, having a donation drive right now. But one of the things that they were able to preserve, and they released this week, which is a very, very interesting thing, is the Sega Channel. So in the mid-90s, Sega wanted people to play Genesis games over cable television. And they had some very, they had different versions of games so it could fit into the memory. But a lot of it was lost to time. And apparently over the past couple of years, the Video Game History Foundation has been working with someone who actually was one of the executives at the Sega Channel in the 90s, but also a collector. And they actually found CD-ROMs that were sent to cable distributors for about 2 years of U.S.-branded Sega Channel information. And they have reconstructed all of the ROMs, and including, and some also in Spanish. They also got Chile and Argentina, I believe, also had Sega Channel. And they reconstructed it and actually have released all of these ROMs. And so you can go through and look at what, you know, a mid-90s online service that came over cable internet, what it looked like at the time. But also some of the very unique versions of games, including Holy Grail. Some people's Holy Grail was there's a version of Garfield The Lost Levels. Three levels that were cut from the main game were a Sega Channel exclusive, lost to time until now. So now you can play those lost levels. You can see exactly why they were cut from the main game. But there's also like other variations. There was a variation of Street Fighter II that only had half the characters because that's all they could fit. You could play versions of games that had two different parts, you know, like some of the Sonic games and things like that. And I actually went in, and there's even a web browser. They actually made a very rudimentary web browser called the Web Blaster, and that's also been preserved. That prototype has been preserved. So it's real fun to kind of go through. And I took some of the ROMs and I put them on my RetroPie and kind of went through and was like, okay, yeah, this is kind of cool. Cause I had the X-Band. I never had Sega Channel because it was only on Spectrum here in the US. I don't think it was on anybody else. We had whatever was Comcast, Xfinity, whatever it was called in the 90s. That's what we had. So we didn't have the Sega Channel, but I had the X-Band modem, which also kind of had some of the same look because that's very 90s. The Video Game History Foundation has all the information. GameHistory.org/Sega Channel is where you can find that information. There is an hour-long YouTube documentary that is on their site that talks about, really goes into like the changes in the ROMs and like what they had to go through, how they dumped it, who they had to find to dump it, all the information. And an Orange Ride even says, I was watching those lost levels. I could see why they were lost, but I'm glad it was preserved so we know what they are. Yes. No, preservation, I am a huge fan of. Apparently also like some of the Sega Channel exclusives were like the only US release of Power Drive, which was one of the Outrun sequels kind of. All that changed was they changed from Mega Drive to Sega Genesis. So, but other than that, they didn't change anything. But it's never been out here in the U.S. So, Fifth Dream says, menu looks like Toe Jam and Earl, because I'm showing the YouTube video from the Video Game History Foundation. And yes, Toe Jam and Earl was just contemporary art in the 90s. It wasn't like that. That's just what things looked like in the 90s. Right, Fifth Dream? You know that. Everything looked like that in the 90s. Everything didn't look like that. That's just all we remember. Good, some good fun stuff that you can check out. And, you know, you can't, you can just put it on your emulators that you already have. You know, like if you've already hacked your Sega Genesis Mini to add your own ROMs, you can add these to it as well. So I did that. All right, let's get into some of the news. And, this has been a rumor that's been going around. I haven't touched it because I wanted to wait for something to actually happen. And it is a little bit about, you know, like nostalgia and game preservation a little bit, but not really. But this is about Arcade 1-Up. Now, I have three Arcade 1-Ups in my house. I have Tron, I have Star Wars, and I have the Sit-Down Outrun. None of them have been modified. They are all stock. They are all, you know, the normal versions of them. And now they have a new owner. Toy Book, that website, reports that the rumor mill regarding the fate of Tastemasters Arcade 1-Up has been swirling for months, and now following news of a potential closure, Basic Fun has confirmed that it's assuming control of the Arcade 1-Up brand following the debut of its own Arcade Classics home arcade range this fall. The following message was shared by the Arcade 1-Up Facebook page earlier this week, saying, quote, "We want to address a few questions we've seen circulating about the Arcade 1-Up product lines. Basic Fun, with an exclamation point, has acquired select assets of Arcade 1-Up and intends to support, to the best of our ability, the home arcade category and existing Arcade 1-Up products currently in the market. This asset acquisition reflects our ongoing commitment to expanding our presence in the home arcade space, supporting current Arcade 1-Up titles and products alongside our own existing arcade offerings. We'll have more to share in the new year and look forward to continuing to serve the arcade fan community. Game on," unquote. That was probably written by AI. Basic Fun has been a player in the gaming space for several years, most recently raising the bar with its range of home arcade products. Notably, several people who worked on Arcade 1-Up products were enlisted to work on the Basic Fun range. Meanwhile, Tastemakers, which launched the home arcade resurgence in 2018, has been plagued with misfortunes in recent years amid executive turnover, IP intellectual property disputes with licensors, including recent legal scuffles with Atari and Coleco, and an increasingly jaded community of gaming enthusiasts. So essentially what those were, Atari, there was a legal scuffle with Atari because Arcade1Up didn't pay for their licenses. Arcade1Up was late on their and they breached the contract with Atari and didn't pay for whatever reason. And then Coleco is because apparently Coleco has the trademark for the phrase head-to-head. And when Arcade1Up released their Pac-Man cocktail table, they used the phrase head-to-head in marketing. And Coleco's like, that's ours. You can't use it. So they're embroiled in that. That was more recent. But there was a thread on Reddit saying that Arcade1Up was ceasing operations just a couple weeks ago. I may have like mentioned it in passing, but I was waiting for something more concrete. But Basic Fun actually entered into the arcades home arcade space earlier this year. And they actually have some games that that Arcade1Up already had. Like, they have a Star Wars cabinet that has the Star Wars yoke, and it's got Star Wars and Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, just like the Arcade1Up Star Wars cabinet, except I believe theirs is full-size. I don't think they do the 3/4 inch. I believe it's actually a full-size cabinet. I'm not sure. But they have the W... I'm going to say the old way of the name, because in the 90s, this is how we said it, they had, like, WWF WrestleFest. And they initially did, like, the bar top. So you would, like, set it on a counter and play it. But then they also released it as a an actual full-size or quarter-size... I don't know if they're full-size or whatever, but stand-up arcade cabinet. Let's put it that way. So they actually started, and they also had some other games that had already been released as Arcade1Ups. So now they're going to get the Arcade1Up stuff in the fold. It's like buying your competitor. And Arcade1Up had apparently made some bad financial decisions, hence the lawsuit from Atari. And so this was kind of inevitable. But also, you got to kind of wonder, like, is the space tapped out? Because the prices have gone up on these, partly due to the companies themselves wanting to charge more for it, and then also the greater economic realities of our world right now driving them even further up. But, you know, it's a very hard ask to tell someone, hey, you should spend $500 on something that literally only plays three games unless you're PodCulture and you go modify it and make it play 8 billion other ones. But it's a hard ask for the generic consumer, for the person who just wants to have an arcade game in their house. It's a huge ask. And so I think the market of people that were going to buy those, they've bought them. And they're not going to buy another one because they've already bought the ones that gave them their nostalgia. That's the problem with nostalgia, is eventually you start running out of memories. So Arcade1Up did try to branch out a little bit. They have an Infinity Game Table, which is for like tabletop games, digital board games. They had a claw machine that is now at Costco. They even had the Wheel of Fortune slot machine, so you can get like that Vegas experience at home. But in terms of like classic arcade games, there wasn't much they could do with the money that they had. So I wonder if the market itself has tapped out, and maybe Basic Fun is a better shot at navigating all that than Arcade1Up did, because Arcade1Up only could have... I think the only thing they had left was the Namco license, and so that's why they kept releasing Pac-Man variants of the Pac-Man cabinet, because that's all they had left. So let's talk about current games and things that are going on right now. We were going to talk about not these Game Awards, but the main game, but the Jeff Keighley Verse Game Awards last week, about what constitutes an indie game. And then this story comes up, and I'm like, well, this is a little bit more important than that, because it's about the same game. It's a different company, different awards body, that has taken a stand, not because of are they indie or not, but because of how they work. Polygon reports that Clarobscur Expedition 33 took home the Game of the Year and debut game honors at the Indie Game Awards on Thursday, but the teams at developer Sandfall Interactive and publisher Kepler Interactive couldn't celebrate for long. On Saturday, the Indie Game Awards retracted Clarobscur's honors due to inclusion of generative AI assets at launch that were quickly patched out. As detailed on the Indie Game Awards FAQ page, the organization states that representatives of Sandfall Interactive agreed that no Gen AI was used in the development of Clarobscur Expedition 33 when the game was submitted for awards consideration. They say, quote, in light of Sandfall Interactive confirming the use of generative AI art in production on the day of the Indie Game Awards 2025 premiere, this does disqualify Clarobscur Expedition 33 from its nomination, unquote. Though the AI-generated assets were patched out, their initial inclusion was enough for the Indie Game Awards to disqualify Clarobscur Expedition 33 and retract its awards. Quotes from earlier in the year from Sandfall Interactive's Francois Maurice made the rounds on social media last week amid a news cycle caught up in the use of generative AI in games, sparked by comments from Larian Studios' Sven Vinke, who said Larian is using AI tools to develop the forthcoming Divinity game. Sandfall Interactive had previously admitted to the use of generative AI in developing Clarobscur. In June, the Spanish outlet El País published a story, including an interview conducted around Clarobscur's launch, in which Maurice admitted that Sandfall used a minimal amount of generative AI in some form during the game's development. He said via Google Translate, quote, we use some AI, but not much. Google Translate, by the way, now powered by Gen AI. It's not the old way. Anyway, the key is that we are very clear about what we wanted to do and where to invest our efforts. And of course, technology has allowed us to do things that were unthinkable not long ago, unquote. So Clarobscur Expedition 33 launched with what some suspected to be AI generated textures that, as is clarified to El País, not El Pies, El País, were then replaced with custom assets in a swift patch 5 days after release. Users on X and Reddit spotted the AI assets, but awareness was not very widespread. Sandfall and Clarobscur received nowhere near as much backlash as, say, 11-Bit Studios did for The Alters, which also included AI-generated background assets. For now, the Indie Game Awards is honoring two other games in the categories that Clarobscur won, with awards going to the next highest-ranked game in the respective category. The debut game award will go to Sorry We're Closed, while the Indie Game Awards Game of the Year honor will be bestowed upon Blue Prince. So that's what they have decided to do is that Clarobscur, because they use generative AI in the development of the game, they are not qualified to win anything at the Indie Game Awards, which is completely their right. It is their award show. They can do whatever they want. ZenMonkey11 asks, what is generative AI? Is it AI that helps them program the game or images and music made with AI? This topic confuses me. So, I'm going to do my best. So, when we talk about generative AI, which is different from other forms of AI, other forms of AI have existed for decades. Generative AI is what we call non-deterministic. So a deterministic, when I say the word deterministic is I tell it to do something, and it does it that way every single time the same way. So like, let's say I am writing code for a program. There is some kind of deterministic automation that converts my code into assembly language or ones and zeros or whatever. And if I write that line of code, every single time the deterministic automation, which is not really AI, but we're going to call it that, deterministic automation here, it will convert that line of code into the exact same ones and zeros every single time. Generative AI is more like non-deterministic automation, where it decides randomly how it's going to convert what you said into the output. And it tries to use all of the knowledge that it has taken from whatever sources it has been exposed to, and it comes with an output. So you can say, I want this, and you ask a non-deterministic AI 10 times, it will use its non-deterministic automation and it will give you 10 different answers, maybe slightly different, or it will, you might get to the same thing, but it would output differently. So if you're doing it in code, I want to, you know, I want you to write a method, a code, a method in code to do this. You ask it that 10 times, it will give you 10 different methods. Whereas a deterministic automation would say, I'm, you know, writing this method, convert it to assembly language, and it would create the exact same list of assembly languages 10 times. So generative AI is the use of non-deterministic automation to speed up doing art or writing code. And probably, and what Sandfall used it here for was when they were developing the game, instead of just having a blank color texture for something on the wall, they had generative AI generate a texture of a newspaper. And they used that in the game while they were still, that way the artists could actually make the real texture, but they forgot. It slipped under the cracks because it wasn't very obviously a placeholder texture. It looked like a regular texture, so when it went through quality assurance and quality control, you know, they didn't catch it, so it shipped with it, and then they were able to immediately fix it and patch it out. So that's what they were doing. That's when we say generative AI, that's what they were doing. They were using non-deterministic automations that rely on huge resources of power and water to generate something so they did not have to generate it themselves. Sandfall used it in a lot of the prototyping so they could get rapid prototypes because also they're a small team. Now, they did have tens of hundreds of people that were contractors, but they were a small team and they didn't have a lot of money. So they were still able to put out a game that looked like a AAA game, and they probably used some generative AI underneath. Mike Dev says, I think it's getting a bit overblown, but I don't fault the people raising concerns about it. And I correct. And Dark Soccer even says, why not just use a lime green image that says placeholder takes 2 seconds to make? Exactly. And I guess they must have felt at the time, or maybe a manager, because here's the thing. A manager probably said, I don't want to see green things with placeholder. We have the technology. We're paying for these tools. Just have it generate a placeholder image, and then we'll fix it. But the thing is, tech bros love generative AI. They love these non-deterministic automations. Even though they know it generates things that are wrong, it's quicker. And they are the ones in charge. They are the ones with the money. They are the ones making the deadlines. And if they say, well, if you use generative AI, you can get this done in a week. And if you don't, you get it done in a month. Well, time is money. Chop, chop. Let's do it in a week. And Dark Soccer says management has no idea about reality. And that's true. A lot of times, even managers don't even know how to do the job of the people they're managing. That's why they're management. And unfortunately, if you want to, I would suggest not rallying against the individual developers, because not everybody is in a position to just leave their company. I was, and you know, I was able to, if you may remember, I was unemployed in July of this year. And it's literally because I was told my company was going to be like, no, 70% of your code needs to be done, created by generative AI. You just edit it. And I quit. The other developer did not. And they are still there. I was the only one that quit. And they were actually, like, the company was like, this is actually a good thing. We're going to get things done quicker because Bobby's not going to be there anymore trying to get it, you know, because the right way is the quick way. And, AI can do my job quicker. It can't do my job better, but it can do it quicker. Therefore, to the people higher up at the company, it's better. Because even if it's slightly wrong, they got it quicker. and speed is of the essence. Technology moves so fast, you hear that all the time. And so they don't have time to have a human do it right when we now have AI, generative AI, and these non-deterministic things learning from everything on the internet, for better or for worse. And that's it's better in that sense. So not everybody has the ability to get away from generative AI, because there are people that are like, if you use generative AI at all, even if it's like to help write your budget, or, you know, somebody, you know, I'm not going to support your company anymore. And here, and the problem with that is that a lot of times it's forced on us. Even at Vogue Network, we don't actually use the output of it, but we, our email is run by Google Workspace. Gemini is on by default. We cannot turn it off. And they raised our price, so we actually like pay like double what we used to, but we now get all of the features of the new generative AI of Gemini. We literally cannot opt out. If we paid more, we can turn off certain things, but we are at like the basement, like cheapest level. We can't opt out. So technically, the Voice of Geeks Network uses generative AI. Now, we ignore, I ignore every single bit of output that it tries to give at me. Let me summarize your email. No, no, I'm not going to read your damn summary, but it still summarizes it. So it's still using the power. It's still using the water. It's still like, it's still damaging the environment just by us having that service. So not everybody is in a position to get away from it, because they are trying to force it into everything, because they need it just to be, it's going to be a thing that happens. And, you know, we were told the same thing about blockchain. It's coming anyway. It's not. It didn't. NFTs, it was coming anyway. I remember hearing that VR games were going to be taking over, and there was not going to be any games played on a monitor ever again. I was told this a lot in like 2018, 2019, around the time that the first Oculus Quest. I was told like, yeah, in 5 years, nobody will be playing game on a monitor. Everybody will be playing VR games. Nope. Metaverse didn't happen either. And so I think, you know, the people that are at the top, they've had all these failures. Blockchain, NFT, metaverse, that they're like, okay, if we just force it on everybody, you're going to have to use it. And there are so many people that can't write an email anymore without ChatGPT. And Tiger Claw even says in chat, we are heading to a future where a push of a button will do things you always wanted to do. And there are so many people that are excited for that. That sounds amazing to a lot of people. There are people that are like, you may have the time to, you know, learn how to play an instrument, but I want to be a musician. I don't have the time to learn music theory. I'll just go to this website and create an account, and I can make whatever music I want, and I'm going to put it up on Spotify, and I can get those half of a cent per listen. And I didn't waste my time learning an instrument, learning how to do music theory. What's a chord? I don't need to know a chord. The computer knows the chord. Dark Sakura said, someone literally said that to me. I told him flat out, you're not a musician, you're a director. I think I used the term producer when somebody had said that. I'm like, oh, so you're a music producer. Because a music producer also does not play any of the music, but they do produce the final output. ZMonkey11 says, I remember there were so many people trying to make money in VR. Now most of them have left the metaverse. They've gone into AI. Like, all the people that I knew that were really big in the VR space are now very big in the AI space. And E3BL says, it's all about instant gratification, no longer the journey. Yes, I mean, then there are people like the video stuff, you know, like, oh, hey, this is amazing. Here's Stephen Hawking in his wheelchair doing flips like he's Tony Hawk. This is great. Yeah, Stephen Hawking's family may hate that. Because you know, that's not cool, but it's funny. So, and I don't know Stephen Hawking's family, so who cares what they think? Like, it doesn't affect me. So yeah. So the long story short here, Clair Obscur Expedition 33, was disqualified from the Indie Game Awards, which is absolutely their right as an award governing body. I do not fault them for that at all. Last week, we were going to talk about them winning a lot of the game awards, and people were like, well, are they really indie? And I was asking, like, what constitutes them being an indie studio? Like, what is the threshold? And is it like, does the quality of the game have to look like pixel art for them to be indie? Because, you know, like they're owned by themselves. And people are like, well, they got funding from a publisher. They're like, yeah, they got funding from an indie publisher that has like five titles that were all indie. Tireclaw says, this is leading to a future where people will be able to concentrate on other things in their life and not let some of the things that involve labor get in the way of their livelihood, which is to sit around and be lazy and do the things you wanted to but couldn't because work doesn't allow it. I'm sorry. AI isn't taking away the physical jobs like garbage collection. It's not taking away mining jobs. It's literally taking away the parts that people wanted to do. It's literally taking the art so people can get back out and do physical work. Like, right, yeah, we're getting to a future where we don't need to worry about creating a piece of music. The robots will create pieces of music for us, so those people who were creating music can now actually just, like, run a cash register or do something that AI can't do yet. Tireclaw says, trash collection I can see being run by automated vehicles where they collect the trash for you. Yeah, but it's not there. They're not there right now. We're talking, you know, in 3 to 5 years, we won't need to create art anymore. We won't need to create music anymore because the robots will do that for us. It will free us up to do things we actually need to do in our community. And that's also not generative AI that would do that. Like, that's not a large language model. Large language model cannot pick up your trash for you. And yet PodCulture says it's not taking away the trades. Yeah, like, it will free up people who are like, oh, I want to write books. I want to make music. It'll free them up to learn, you know, how to be a plumber or a carpenter, to build a house, or, you know, a general contractor or an electrician. That's what it's going to free them up to do. It's going to free them away from having to write stories or create music. Immortal King says, so I could get a black lung in a coal mine because I can no longer work IT. Yeah, pretty much. Children yearn for the mines. Did you know that? As Sharon and Matt says, sometimes it's about the journey and not the destination. There are countless movies about musicians going through the creative process to make an amazing album. Now folks just want to write a prompt to avoid all that. And yes, they do. Or they will actually say, well, now, and so here's one of the arguments you can hear from AI people. Is like, because, you know, stories today, they're too right? That's what a lot of them say. It's showing me viewpoints I don't care about. Well, what if in this future you could say, I want a Star Wars-like story that only has my viewpoints, my political leanings, my spiritual leanings. I don't want to be challenged on any of my beliefs. Generative AI will give that. So that now you don't need to be exposed to someone else's experience. You don't need to have your ideas, your worldview challenged by people who are woke. You can just write a prompt and you can get it yourself. PodCulture says AI is going to lay a brick. And I read that. And I'm like, but it lays bricks all the time when you actually see its output. But he means like actual, like literal brick, like the red brick that you anyway. Isn't this a cheery conversation for the end of the year? I know. Usually I take a music break. I did not do that tonight, obviously. And so I'm looking in, and just in case anybody's trying to call in, Tireclaw says, in the future, AI will build houses right to your specs. No. If you honestly think that the people who control land are going to let you build your own house in this day and age, no. Yeah, they're not. There's going to be too many people that want to have too many hands in your pocket, getting the money. And here's the other thing, just one last thing about generative AI. If generative AI was capable of doing all this stuff that everybody says, like generative AI is capable of delivering a AAA blockbuster game, they wouldn't be trying to sell it to you. they would be trying to hoard it for themselves if Microsoft Copilot could actually build a AAA best-selling game. They wouldn't be trying to sell the technology to you. They would be hoarding it for themselves and using it to generate a bunch of AAA blockbuster games. I do actually think we have a call in the green room. So why don't we do this? And yes, there is going to be Marvels on stream tonight. We will be doing Marvels on stream probably twice, only two more times maybe. So this week and next week. So we do actually have a call in the green room. So I'm going to drag this in and see who is in. Bobby Blackwell Show, you are on the air. Who is this?
Hey, this is Mike Deft.
Mike Deft, what's on your mind?
Well, we're going to talk about generative AI because that's the topic right now.
Yes.
And I have my few cents on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, and I already said it on chat, the message, and I said that with Expedition 33, I think people are kind of taking it over a little overboard.
Mm-hmm.
It's not overblown, though I do get why the concerns. I do get why also people went up in arms against Larian using or going to use generative AI also for some of the production and development of their new game. And I also I also like Arc Raiders, another game that uses AI.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I kind of want to play that game, but knowing that they're consciously using AI for voice acting is like turning me off the game. But in some cases, like with Expedition, I think that's like okay, they fixed it, they amended their error. Maybe with Larian and Divinity, it's mm-hmm. also gonna be like, oh, they're only using it for some placeholders just to do some quick work. But at the same time, I do get the people that say that they're against it and they're yeah. not supporting those developers because yeah, it's also taking jobs. It's also doing work that any other person could easily do.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a really tough yeah. like decision like or situation to think about because I'm not totally against AI at least in the sense of tools and assistance
yeah
but in the generative sense yeah I'm totally against it but it's a really thin line to walk on to yeah. walk on.
Yeah, so, I mean, because there's a lot of good things that a neural network or something that runs like a large language model could do, like detecting patterns in, like, cancer treatments. Like, that's great. Unfortunately, we're using it to generate videos of Stephen Hawking acting like Tony Hawk. And we're not using it to actually, like, look at cancer. We're not using it to help, assistive devices for people who have disabilities. We're not using it for that because that doesn't sell. And, you know, there's been a lot of advancements that have been deterministic in nature, deterministic automations. Like, you know, 30 years ago, if you wanted to make a game, you had to build your own engine. You had to build your own graphic engine. You had to know linear algebra. You needed to know matrix manipulation, vector math, all that stuff. And then Unity, the Unity game engine came out. And suddenly you didn't need to know any of that anymore. But it's also deterministic. You could still know how it works and it did the same thing every single time. And so I think there are some people that are not that try to look at this without as much emotion that are like, well, this is just the next generation of that. Of, you know, these are tools to speed us up, just like how the Unity game engine 20 years ago sped up game development because now you didn't need to actually write the code that put the pixel on the screen. Somebody else did that for you. And I wonder if, you know, that's where they're looking at it and it's just we see all the extremes and that's why we need the AI bubble to kind of burst. So we can get the generative AI side back to what it should be and used for what it should be used for. Because frankly, the .com bubble burst, but we still have .coms. the blockchain bubble burst, the blockchain still exists. It's just being used a little bit differently. And I think that's what we're kind of waiting on right now.
Yeah, and looking in hindsight, because I have a bachelor's degree in translation. Mm-hmm. And this was over 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And our teachers were like, oh, you shouldn't use machine translation because it's always going to get things wrong. It's not going to interpret stuff correctly. It's mm-hmm. not there yet. And right now I'm seeing stuff like with Apple and their live translation stuff, Google also, like it's really hard right now to tell when someone uses translation or machine mm-hmm. translation. And that's how I see right now the generative AI stuff that mm-hmm. maybe and that's pretty possible that the generative AI stuff is gonna blow up. Mm-hmm. It's another bubble that people are gonna it's another fad basically.
I wouldn't call it a fad.
People are gonna forget about it.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's gonna be a fad, and I don't think it's gonna go away, but I think the companies that are pushing it right now, we're kind of in the phase right now in the dot-com bubble. One of the things that happened is there were websites that literally sold ice over the internet, like ice as in frozen water, not any other connotation of the word ice right now, but like literally like ice cubes and ice blocks on the internet. And we literally had websites like that. And that was the type of stuff that busted in the dot-coms. But, you know, we still have dot-com companies, Amazon.com still around, things like that. So it's just kind of like became a little bit more realistic, but we are still in the selling ice on a website variant of generative AI companies. So
yeah,
so it's not going to go away. It's not a fad because people also said the internet was a fad.
I kind of meant it in the way that the bubble is going to burst.
Yeah.
Like with the dot-coms, with blockchain mm-hmm. and other stuff that has gone through the years, and with technology especially.
Yeah.
But it's gonna stay.
Yeah.
And only in the sense of tools, basically. Yeah. I think that's the thing.
Yeah.
And again, turning to that comparison to machine translation that pretty much AI also has gotten into. Mm-hmm. We still see it, and it is getting better. It will get better.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily something you have to use. And that's the thing, right? That we should still be creatives. We still should be human.
Yeah.
And not let the machine do all the stuff for us. It's good to help. It's good to have it there for when we need it, but it's not the all ends means to do everything.
But the people in the movie WALL-E were happy. Mike Deft.
Oh, yeah.
The people in the movie WALL-E were happy. Always great to hear from you. Thanks so much.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So there we go. That was the call that we had. Thank you so much for calling in. We do take calls basically over Discord. Vognetwork.com/Discord is where you can go and jump in the green room voice chat channel. Then I pull you into another one. And then if my microphone works, we can actually chat just like this. All right. So, that is it for me. I will be back next Sunday night, but not in 2 weeks. I will be at Awesome Games Done Quick in 2 weeks. But also, I will be hosting part of RTA in Japan, the English Restream, starting on the 25th. That is Christmas Day. I will be on for five different times for like multiple hours, like 20 hours throughout the week, chatting about games. The game that they're running currently, whatever, in Japan. It is benefiting Doctors Without Borders, and you can find that more at twitch.tv/EnglishRestream. And I will be working with them this week. And then I will see you again right before the new year. We will see you next week. And we're going to be playing some marbles just after this. So stick around for that. You can also find me on Instagram at Bobby Blackwolf, Blue Sky at BobbyBlackwolf.com, and on our Discord server. Hey, if you like the show, tell a friend. If you hate the show, tell an enemy. I don't care. Just tell someone. The show is not for everybody, but it may be for somebody who does not know about it yet. But we would not be able to make this live show work without the help of the chatters who go above and beyond. We had a hype train earlier. Mike Deft resubscribed and said 7 whole years and counting, and that is right, because January is when we hit affiliate, but we started broadcasting these shows on Twitch in December of 2018. So it has been 7 years that we moved from internet radio, Shoutcast internet radio, to Twitch being on video. So, yeah, thank you so much for, the resubscription and telling us that it's been 7 years that we've been here on this platform. SJ and Matt resubscribed. Sean322 cheered 200 bits saying, "Hoip!" And that got us our hype train. SJ and Matt cheered 200 bits. Orange Wright resubscribed also for the 84th time. So that's another seven year. Tiger Claw resubscribed. Twitch math is weird. Tiger Claw's been here for the whole time as well. And then Sean322 cheered 200 bits just a few minutes ago saying, "Marbles, marbles, we are here for marbles." Yes. So, yeah, Mike Deff says, not to mention Vogue is older than 7 years. Yeah, Vogue launched in 2012. So, that's 13 years. We've been around for 13 and a half years as the Voice Geeks Network. This show has been around for 20 and a half years, starting in 2005. So we're old. That's what we're going to say. And while I'm sitting here saying that we're old, I'm going to hit this button that will take us out. And I will load up some marbles. Pod Culture lost his marbles already, but we're going to find them in just a few minutes. See you next week. Have a Merry Christmas if you celebrate.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed are those of the hosts, guests, and callers only, and are not necessarily the opinions of
the Vogue Network, people who need to hire new voiceover guys,
or your mom. Although if Bobby said it, it really should be. This has been a production of Bobby Blackwolf Studios.